Okay, so to try to cap off this point about the impact of Dinim Darabanan on Dinim Daraisa, so you've gotten a little bit of a sense already that there is a very vast literature about this, and we're going to try to suggest a path through it and to highlight some of the key components of the discussion. So what we've seen so far is that whether a Gezeirah Darabanan can nullify a fulfillment, even on a level of Minhag Torah, seems to be a machlokas rishonim, and certainly among the achronim. And we saw, for example, some of the discussions, what if you have a positive mitzvah that is enhanced by chazal, kiddush most prominently, a few other possible examples. Is that something which can be fulfilled on a Torah level anymore if Chazal have added to it and you're not living up to that standard? We saw that in the context of the Gezeirah of not keeping your table outside a sukkah, there explicitly there was a machlokas rishonim that many of the rishonim took the Gemara literally and said that you're not yotzei at all if you violate the din derabanan. Other Rishonim, such as Aran, said, no, come on, you are Yotze, it's just not perfect. And then we saw at the level of the Achronim, a whole debate emerged about Shofar, about our topic this week and this year, about Shofar on Shabbos. And there are many, many players, but the prominent Achronim who took sides here, most prominently Rabbi Akiva Eiger, was among those who said that you are yotzei after the fact, even though it's usher to blow shofar on Shabbos, but there is a mitzvah there that is being fulfilled nonetheless, that remains untouched. And others who disagreed, prominently the Chelkis Yoav and his Kavi Tekashesa, which you got a chance to see inside, he considers this to be one of his unanswerable questions. How could it be you could consider such a thing? Clearly, Chazal had taken it out of the running, had taken the mitzvah out of play completely. So we saw some possible grounds for some distinctions. So, for example, we noted that if you have a positive mitzvah that's modified, it's more likely that there's still a mitzvah d'oraisa under the surface, and that the mitzvah is still fulfillable on a basic level, even if you're not accomplishing what Chazal asked for. But if there's a prohibition, if Chazal said, don't blow shofar because we're worried about Chilul Shabbos, so then maybe it makes more sense to say, if they're worried about an Avera, that they nullified it completely. And that would be the view, pretty much like the Chelkis Yoav and others in that camp, that they took the mitzvah completely off the table. Now, there are a lot of interesting distinctions in between, because there are many who side with Rabbi Akiva Eiger and say that the mitzvah still is there, but still you have to account for the view of Tosfos and Sukkah and the like that say that the Sukkah is no good if you violate this drabanan of having your table outside the Sukkah. So, for example, there's one sefer that suggested that maybe the idea is that Chazal, when they're worried about something, so they made it as if that concern had already happened. So it's interesting to follow that line of thought, that if they're worried, you may follow your table outside the sukkah. So what would happen if you did that? So if you followed your table outside the sukkah in actuality, what would happen then? You'd be outside the sukkah. So you wouldn't be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of sukkah. So Chazal followed it through to the conclusion. But let's say you blew shofar on Shabbos, and let's say you did carry the shofar outside. What would happen to the mitzvah of shofar? It would presumably still be there. It's not like sukkah, where the concern is taking you out of the sukkah, and therefore we could understand why it might negate the mitzvah. Here, it's a separate concern, so Chilul Shabbos and shofar are different, So if one wanted to side with Rabbi Akiva Eiger and say the mitzvah is still there, but also side with the Tosfos that say that the sukkah is no good, that might be one reason to do it. There are others who took a more specific reading when it comes to sukkah, and they said, maybe this is not a principle in general by other things, but maybe it's specific to Hilchos Sukkah. How could it be specific to Hilchos Sukkah? Well, maybe Chazal decided, once they made this rule, that it's not a dira anymore. It's not a residence. And Sukkah, we say, Teshvu Kein Taduru. And therefore, if it's not a residence, you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Sukkah. Or maybe in the case of Sukkah, there has to be a monetary component. Maybe the Sukkah has to be worth something. And maybe Chazal used their monetary authority to make it worthless. And therefore, they negated the mitzvah. But by other things, maybe not. So there are a couple of suggestions out there how to draw distinctions, why they would do one, why they would do the other. But what's a little bit missing from this whole approach, and what we need to maybe consider a little more directly, if some of these answers are trying to consider, well, in this case, Chazal would want to cancel the mitzvah. In the other case, there'd be no point to cancel the mitzvah. Right? So let's say, for example, you say with Kiddush, there's no motive for Chazal to cancel the mitzvah because it might as well be accomplished if that's all you can do. But when it comes to Shofar, we don't want you risking Shabbos, so they cancel that mitzvah. Right? If you take an answer like that, as much as it makes sense, there's one question that's being skipped over. You see what I'm getting at? What's the question? If you say an answer like that, there's a question you need to establish first. Anyone have a sense of what I'm trying to hint at here? If your answer says, well, in this case, Chazal didn't want to negate the mitzvah, but in another case, they did choose to negate the mitzvah. Any sentence that's like that is assuming something. Akiva? Thank you. Exactly. Right? It's assuming that they have the power to do so. And maybe that's a central question we need to figure out. Right? Not, would they? Do they want to? Is here a good idea? Is not a good idea there? A lot of the discussions take that for granted. But isn't that a little bit a major step to cross first? Right? Where do we get the premise that Chazal can cancel a mitzvah? If the Torah is eternal, which we certainly believe, right, so where do you find contained within the power of Chazal the ability to turn off a mitzvah? Kiva?
Does it change the question if you look at it not as negating necessarily, but just choosing between two values and siding with one value, which as a result would have to, negate, I guess, the other value?
Well, the question is, I'm not sure. I don't know if that'll end up making a difference, because we know that much, right? We know one thing everyone agrees is that Chazal have the right to tell us not to blow shofar the shas, and that we have to listen to him, and we're not supposed to do it. So we know that that's the decision we're supposed to make. But what we don't know is, kind of metaphysically, what does that do? Does that drain the shofar of any mitzvah? So however we prioritize things, the idea that we're kind of rewriting the Torah, that's where it gets striking. So one suggestion Velvel made yesterday, I don't know if you realized you were making it to address this question, but you know what I'm referring to, what you said yesterday? The point about mitzvah habavi avera. That maybe that's at play here. And that's indeed how some achronim suggest. Some achronim suggest that maybe what's going on is the invoking of the principle of mitzvah habavi avera. Now we have such a notion that if you perform a mitzvah through the transgression of an avera, so then one is not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So if we say that there is a prohibition to violate what Chazal say, so that's a violation, for example, of Lo Sasser, so then maybe that should do it. So the Isser of Lo Sasser creates a mitzvah habavi avera. And if that's the case, so fine. So you're not Yosei for that reason. So Chazal didn't need any special powers in order to negate something. It just happened as a result of the fact that there's an avera taking place. So that is an approach that you find in some svarim. And that might be it. Maybe that's the story. So really, it's kind of a technicality. They don't get to redefine any mitzvah. They just get to impose an avera, and that avera triggers mitzvah habavi avera. And then you have to figure out, in every case, are we talking about an avera? So maybe when it comes to blowing shofar on Shabbos, maybe that's an avera d'rabbanan. And maybe that would trigger mitzvah habavi avera. But maybe making kiddush without being b'makom suda, or doing something that qualifies as kiddush, there's no avera there per se. But there's just a lack of something. So there's no mechanism necessarily to have mitzvah habavi avera. You'd have to do something wrong. So if you put on tzitzis with shatnez, which is an issur d'rabbanan, so if you got to see the rush today, and thanks to Sam for finding it on Safari and sending it out, so that if you worked through the whole thing, but the line was there in the middle, that you pick up the key line that the rush says that indicates something about this. Rush says that if you were to wear tzitzis with shatnez and make a bracha on that tzitzis, what did the Rush say about that? The bracha of atala. There's no mitzvah. The mitzvah has been neutralized. So is it neutralized because Chazal turned it off? Do they have that power? Or should we say that no, they don't have that power, but what they do have is the ability to create an avera, and if you violate the avera, it's a mitzvah habavi avera. Now, there is, in general, a discussion about whether mitzvah habavi avera applies if the avera is drabanan. So clearly that impacts on things here. But that's one possible approach. That's one way to give them the power. But if you don't use that approach, which is a little bit coming from an outside factor, so if you're not going to turn to mitzvah habavi avera, we have to address the central question that Akiva is asking, thank you, is that do Chazal have the power? Then we can start talking about when they chose to invoke it and when they didn't choose to invoke it. But first, we have to ask the question, do they have this authority? So that question is pretty crucial. And the truth is, I think it really parallels another major issue in the Achronim. And I'm a little surprised, I haven't really seen this in any other Svarim that make this parallel, but I think the parallel is pretty compelling. So what am I talking about? Now, I didn't give you any Makoris about this specifically, because I think we spoke about it maybe earlier in the year, but if not, I can give you some Makoris, you can fill it in tomorrow. But there is a general machlokas about the nature of Isurim Darabanan. And it seems like it very much parallels this question, and it's very much what's behind this question. There are many Achronim who maintain that there is a fundamental difference between Isurim Daraisa and Isurim Darabanan. And those who were with us for Chulin last year may recall we spoke about it a little bit in that context. That the difference could be defined as follows. when you're dealing with, let's say, a Torah prohibition, let's say chazer, somebody eats chazer. So chazer is inherently spiritually damaging to a Jew. It's what we call in Brisker terminology a iser chepza, right? That the object is bad, the object is dangerous. While in iser drabanan, many assume that an iser drabanan cannot be an iser bechepza, that the item doesn't have any spiritual harm inherent in it. So if you have, let's say, a chicken cheeseburger, that's an iser drabanan, so that's not inherently dangerous spiritually. It's what we would call an iser gavra. It's that Chazal told us not to eat it, so therefore we're not permitted to eat it. But the item is neutral. And that is all based, or a lot of it is based, on a comment of the Nesivos HaMishpat, who doesn't say this straight out, but he's interpreted this way. What the Nesivos writes is that sometimes when you have an Iser D'oraisa, so you have an onesh if you violate the Iser D'oraisa b'mezid, right, under the right circumstances of intentionality and the like, if you violate an Iser D'oraisa, so you have an onesh. If you violate an Iser D'rabbanan, so then it may have a different structure to it. We don't have onshin per se, but it may differ from a d'oraisa in the following way, in the following additional way. That nisr d'oraisa b'mezid, you have an onesh often. And sometimes, the shogeg, there's also a consequence. Right? When you do an aveira b'shogeg, so then you have to have a kapara, sometimes a karban. That there has to be some atonement for the aveira, even though it wasn't on purpose. Right? And the assumption being that there's still a spiritual stain that needs to be fixed. But if you're dealing with an iser d'rabbanan, the view of the Nesivos, as explained by later Svarim, is that if you do it b'shogeg, if you do it inadvertently, there's no need for any kind of a kapar. There's nothing to fix. Why? What's the difference? You understand the distinction? Anybody want to try to spell it out a little more? Yeah, Vavu?
Because if it's an Isra on the Gavra, then it's all about your perspective and your relationship to it. If your relationship to it was the shogeg, then it's not, since the chepta is not inherently bad, so then you're not going to get punished for it.
Right. So, yes, exactly.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yeah, please.
So, wouldn't that apply more towards an ones? Meaning a shogeg still means that you didn't have completely the right perspective on it.
So it's not, you're not totally innocent. The shogeg still implies a certain amount of neglect. Right, so that's true. If you understand, it's interesting, there's actually a machlokas, a meforshim on chumash, as to what the issue is, as to why there's a concept of a korban for an avera b'shogeg. And so if you perceive it as being, but a shogeg is not totally innocent, a shogeg is still careless, is still neglectful, so then you're right. Why shouldn't we say that by the Rabbanans also? And indeed, there are those who disagree with the Nesivos maybe for that reason. But if you focus on a different explanation of the idea of the kapar, that it's not because you were careless necessarily, even though if you were 100% blameless, if you're an onus, it wouldn't apply, so that distinction has to be explained somehow. But it's because there's a stain, there's still a spiritual impact. So, for example, saying that a baby shouldn't be fed non-kosher food, even though the baby has no chiyuv in mitzvot, but there's some kind of a spiritual impact of non-kosher food, even separate from any avera. So if that's the case, so then maybe the distinction is more understandable, that with an Iser D'oraisa, there's something in the Chepza, but with an Iser D'rabbanan, there's nothing in the object. The idea being that the object was neutral before the rabbis made any ruling. chicken cheeseburger until Chazal made their gezerah, had no spiritual poison in it. It was totally neutral. And then when the rabbis came and made a gezerah and said, we don't want you eating chicken and milk, it's too similar to meat and milk, you may come to do one to do the other. So what? Reality changed? Metaphysics changed? All of a sudden it became spiritually poisonous? Presumably not. Presumably it stays the same. But because the Torah says, well, Sasim and Hadavar, we're not allowed to deviate from Chazal's instruction. So we are prohibited to rebel against Chazal's instruction. We're not allowed to eat the chicken cheeseburger. But, this is what Velvel was saying, but what if I'm not rebelling? I didn't realize it was a chicken cheeseburger. Or I forgot about the whole issue. I'm totally respectful towards rabbinic authority. I just didn't realize there was a concern here. So then there's a case to be made that that's nothing. There's no act of rebellion. The whole Isser is formulated as rebellion. I didn't rebel. I wasn't aware of what I was doing. So therefore, essentially, nothing happened. Now, Velvel's other point is well taken, but still, you're careless, still, you know, so again, not everyone agrees with the Nesivus, and there's some debate about this. But that's what the position would seem to be. That a Daraisa has inherent negativity to it, so even unintentionally you brushed up against it. While an Issa Darabanan is all about rebellion. If you're not rebelling, you're not doing anything. There's an interesting, for example, Bochanan Wasserman in one place explains, there's an interesting Tosus in Yavamas and Daf Tes, where Tosus discusses, we know that if I have a Kohen who's in a building and somebody dies in the building, there's Tumas Kohenim in the building, so the Kohen has to run out. The Tosus says if there's a Tumah Drabanan in the building, then the Kohen doesn't have to run out, he can walk out. What's the difference between running and walking? We're going to put a speedometer on him to calculate. There's a certain miles per hour. That's with the race, so you have to go this many miles per hour and Rabbanan, and you can go with it. What does that mean? So Rabbi Hanan explained that the Tuma Daraisa, the dead body, that is like spiritual radioactivity. So the Kohen has to run out to not get harmed. But the Drabanan is just about compliance, that you can't rebel against what the rabbi said to do. So if you're in the process of leaving, you're compliant. You're not rebelling against the din. So it doesn't matter how fast you're walking. The distinction is like the difference between a fire and a fire drill. That if there's a fire in the building, so somebody runs out because he doesn't want to get burnt by the fire. But if there's a fire drill, so you got to leave because you got to play by the rules. But nobody's running because they know there isn't any actual danger. They just have to be obeying the rules. So that's how he explains that Tosus essentially in that way, that when it comes to Dinim Drabanan, it's all about the Gavra. It's all about are you complying or not, so you have to follow it. So Chazal have the authority over Jews, over Jewish adults, to tell them that they have to follow. But they don't have authority over reality. So they can't turn the chicken cheeseburger into something bad. It's still neutral. All they can do is tell Jewish adults that they're not allowed to eat it because they have to obey the authority. And the question is, I'm emphasizing Jewish adults because the whole question in Rishonim, how can you have a concept of chinuch derabanan to say children are obligated to do mitzvahs on a level midrabanan? So because of this issue, the Rishonim argue, how could you say children are chayiv drabanan? If they're not chayiv in mitzvos, they're not chayiv in los osir. If they're not chayiv in los osir, so then how do they even have mitzvos drabanan? Which leads some Rishonim to say, there's actually no obligation on children to do mitzvos ever. There's an obligation on parents to teach children what to do. But children never have any obligation because you can't be obligated midrabanan if you're not subject to Los Osir. Los Osir is only binding on Jewish adults who have to listen to it. It's not binding on children, and it's not binding on reality. So it doesn't turn a chicken cheeseburger into something bad because that is outside the scope of Los Osir. Okay, so far so good. So that is one side of the issue. However, there are those who disagree for any number of reasons. A lot of reasons why there are those who argue on the Nesiva. But one pointed approach especially is Rav Yosef Engel, who we've mentioned a few times. So Rav Yosef Engel, in his Sefer Asen Daraisa, so he disagrees with the whole premise. And he says that an Isser the Rabbanan can actually attach to the object. That the Isser of, let's say, chicken cheeseburgers could theoretically be in the item itself. It could take on a different status. Why should that be true? Because there are a few statements in Chazal in different places. There's Midrashim, there are Gemaras in different places, depending on which one you want to invoke, where it says that Moshe Rabbeinu made a certain Gezerah, or Chazal made a certain Gezerah, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu was Maskim Al Yado, and God essentially endorsed that Gezerah. So what happens was that, yes, it was neutral until the rabbis came along, but because of the whole, as they say, authority vested in them, because of what the Torah has granted Chazal to take such measures, so therefore the impact is that, yes, God signs off on it, and once they make their din, it now has a reality to it. So even though the chicken cheeseburger was neutral before they came along, once they made this ruling, now chicken cheeseburgers are spiritually harmful. Now there actually is something embedded within the chetzer. So he argued on that whole premise for that reason. So there you have a machlokes about the scope of Los Aser. Right, the scope of this Isser, of this Koach given to Chazal, and Isser Rabbanan is created because of Los Aser. So you have a machlokes as to just how far it goes. According to the Nesivus camp, which I mean the Nesivus' comment and how it was interpreted in later generations, according to the Nesivus camp, a Isser Rabbanan can only attach to an individual, because the scope of Los Aser is limited. All it does is it speaks to Jewish adults and tells them what they can or cannot do, or what they must do. But it doesn't have any power beyond that. But according to the Rav Yosef Engel camp, no, it does have more power. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu backs up the ability of Chazal to make Gezeros, and whatever they do now changes the world. And now in Isser D'Rabbanan, that becomes reality. So it would seem that that's essentially our machlokes here. That when Chazal say, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, or don't sit in a sukkah with your table outside, or maybe even make kiddush only b'makom suda, whichever case we're talking about, that essentially, it's the same question. Do we say, like the Nesivus camp, that Los Aser is limited, and it only addresses Jewish adults, and nothing beyond that? So all it could possibly mean is, we want you to make Kiddush the Makom Suda. We want you to sit in the sukkah with a table inside. We want you not to blow shofar on Shabbos, to take a lulav on Shabbos. And you're obligated to obey. You're obligated to follow that desire of Chazal. But the mitzvah can't change, because the mitzvah is not controlled by Los Aser. But if you're in the Rav Yosef Engel camp, we see more than that. No, that God signs on to Los Aser. God signs on to the expressions of Los Aser. And therefore, when they say, don't blow a shofar on Shabbos because you might carry, maybe it means, okay, God signs on to it, fine, that mitzvah is no longer on the books. that mitzvah is no longer live when you click on it. And then we could start asking questions. Okay, maybe Chazal have some control over the process, and they can decide how to formulate it. And they can say, in some cases, we are negating the mitzvah, and maybe in other cases not. And then you have room for all that discussion in the Achronim when you draw distinctions. And you say, well, maybe a positive mitzvah not, and a negative concern of an Aveira maybe yes, but that only gets off the ground if you give them that power in the first place. And that essentially seems to be directly parallel to this machlokas between the Nesivis camp and the Rav Yosef Engel camp. What do you think? Does that make sense? So perhaps that's the issue here. So this, as we see, has a couple of major impacts. There are some who have added suggestions. So, for example, there are those who go back to the Pasuk in Parshas Shoftim, and the language isn't only Lo Sasser, but part of the same Pasuk is Yasisa Kasher Yerucha, that you should do what they instruct you to do. So that could mean that you do as they instruct you to do, including the whole package. If you agree with the Rambam that they have legislative authority also, so then you have to perform the mitzvah the way they tell you to do it. So when you come to ask to blow shofar, and you say, does the shofar take place on Shabbos? So if Chazal were to say, well, Minat Torah, yes, Minat Torah takes place any day of the week, but we think you shouldn't take it on Shabbos because of a concern of carrying. So then maybe that's all included in Kasisa Vasisa Kasher Yerucha, that you shall behave based on how they instruct you, and therefore that becomes a part of what the mitzvah is, and if you're not doing it that way, that's not as they instruct you, and essentially it's not being fulfilled. So this has implications all over. It impacts lots of other things. For example, there is a tshuva of the Sholem Meshuv. Sholem Meshuv, Rav Yosef Sholem Nathanson, who wrote trillions of tshuvas. He wrote like many, many tshuvas, more tshuvas than you could ever count. So one of his discussions is, let's say a woman goes to the mikveh, and she has a chatzitza. She has something on her body that gets in the way. So when it comes to the laws of chatzitza, so there are some chatzitzas that are big enough to be a problem by Torah law, and there are some that are smaller, and they're only a problem midrabanan. So before a woman goes to the mikveh, so we make sure she doesn't have any chatzitza at all. But let's say she does go, and she has a chatzitza that only is on a level midrabanan. So do we say, well, midrabanan, we require her to go again? But lamaisa she's tahora because the mikveh works on a level min haTorah. Or do we say no? Do we say the mikveh didn't take effect because Chazal said this is a chetzitza, so therefore on no level did it work? So here again, there was a big discussion. The Sholem Meshuv thought that was a problem, even a level min haTorah. Others disagreed. The Gemara also says that we know that the woman who gets divorced has to have a get, and if she doesn't have a get, that impacts the status of any children born from a future marriage. So what if the get is only pasul midrabanan? So does that impact on the status of the future children? So the Gemara actually says that it does, which sounds like that would seem to answer the question, except many Rishonim, including the Ran, which is maybe Lashitaso here, the Ran say that's only true, that statement is only true on a level midrabanan. So that brings up seemingly the same kind of issue. So this is something that affects issues, the Chalatarakula. In every area of halacha, you find this making a difference. And including Choshen Mishpat, by the way. Because that's where the Nesivis got, so we just gave you an example from Yoredei and from Evan Ezer. We just gave you an example from Hilchos Mikvos and from Hilchos Gittin. So we know that it applies in Aruch Chaim. We've been talking about Hilchos Yontif, so we just gave you three sections of Shulchan Aruch. I'll give you a fourth one, the context where the Nesivus made his comment. So let's say I sell you food that is not kosher. I sell you an animal, and it turns out the assumption is that you'll be able to chef this animal and eat it, and it turns out that it's actually not kosher. So the Mishnah says in Bukhara, so that's a mekach tos, you have the right to come and claim a refund because you got it under false pretenses. And even if you ate some of the meat, let's say you shechted the animal and you ate some of the animal already, not knowing this, you still have a right for a refund because it was essentially worthless halachically for food. But there's a distinction between Daraisa and Darabana on that front, that you can get a refund for the whole thing, but if you already ate it, you can only get a refund on that which was no good min haTorah. If it was no good midrabana and you ate it not knowing that you can't get a refund for, and that's where the Nesivus makes his comment, because min haTorah, the part that's not kosher, is worthless. The part that's not kosher midrabana isn't worthless, it's just something you weren't allowed to knowingly eat. If you ate it anyway, not knowing, okay, so it was worth something to you. You had a good meal not knowing that it was a problem. So this affects every area of halacha. But that's essentially all we'll say about it for now. But we still have other avenues to consider. So tomorrow, we want to consider another aspect of this issue before getting into a little more about shofar specifically and the issues of this year. But what about the other rules of Akiras Davar Min HaTorah? Sheva Al Tasa, right? It can only happen if it's B'Sheva Al Tasa. Why is that true? Why do we make such a distinction? If Chazal have this power, why do they limit it? Why is it limited? And what does Sheva Al Tasa even mean practically? So this is an issue, these are two issues that Rabbi Hanan considered and had a beautiful structure where they all ended up explaining each other. So that I want to share with you tomorrow, but I'll just mention one more point as a bridge. So the question of what does Sheva Al Tasa mean? So the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva where he has a very unusual explanation. And he says, that's why I side with Rabbi Akiva Eger. There's Rabbi Akiva Eger who says that the mitzvah of shofar must still exist, even if it's prohibited to do. The mitzvah is still there. Says the Avnei Nezer, I think that must be right, even though my Talmud, the Chalkes Yoav, will write in the Kavit HaKesheis, it's impossible. I think it's right. Why? Because Chazal only have the ability to uproot a mitzvah b'sheva al tasa, not b'kumva aseh. And Sheva Al Tasa means, okay, just sit at home and don't blow shofar. But if they were to say the mitzvah was gone, that would be kumvase. They'd get up and rewrite the Torah. That would be kumvase, which is a whole different understanding of what that phrase means. Right? We would assume it refers to your behavior in terms of doing the mitzvah. But here he's giving an unusual explanation that it refers to how Chazal would relate to its existence as a mitzvah. That if Chazal were to say, it's no longer a kiyum at all, that would be kumva aseh. So it's a completely different interpretation that Sheva Al Tasa just means, we're not touching anything. But to actually change the parameters of the mitzvah, that's where the limit is, and that would also answer the question, why is it limited? Because they don't have that koach in the first place. So that was never given to them by the Torah, according to that view. Okay, so just to recap what we saw today. So we spoke about different permutations in when the mitzvah could be negated and when it isn't, and how some suggest mitzvah saseh, there's no reason to negate it. Mitzvah slo saseh, maybe it's a concern of a lo saseh, that is a reason. Or maybe even with mitzvah saseh, it depends what we're afraid of. So with the sukkah, we're afraid you're going to come outside the sukkah, in which case that would mean indeed there'd be no mitzvah. But in the case of shofar, maybe separate, but all of this was working off the assumption that Chazal could turn it on and off. And that skipped over the basic question of, do they have that power in the first place? Can they actually negate a mitzvah? Wouldn't we assume that the Torah is eternal, and even if they have the authority to tell you to sit out Rosh Hashanah, but that doesn't necessarily imply that they can control whether the mitzvah is there anymore. So we said one approach, like Zalvo said, is mitzvah babi aveira. So maybe mitzvah babi aveira applies to drabanan. And once they make a rule, so that it's an aveira, and then any mitzvah is not going to be fulfilled violating that aveira. And that leaves room for distinction. Or maybe it's a more fundamental question as to the scope of Lo Sasser. And we saw that there was a major machlokas achronim that the Nesivus camp maintained that Lo Sasser is only addressed to Jewish adults. So therefore, a Isser Chepta can't exist. An item cannot be defined by an Isser Rabbanan. Only your behavior can be defined. And Rav Yosef Engel disagreed and said, no, God agrees. He endorses whatever the Rabbanans are made. And therefore, yes, it controls reality also, and it impacts facts beyond our behaviors. That seems to be the same machlokas, that either we say that, no, they can only tell us what to do. They can tell us don't blow shofar, but they can't tell us what happens to that mitzvah inherently. That's in the hands of the Torah. And according to the Rav Yosef Engel camp, no, God signs off on it, and yes, then the mitzvah becomes defined based on the parameters. And we gave a few examples about how this affects Kol HaTorah Kul, affects every chelek of Shulchan Aruch. It comes up everywhere, and then we said we have to figure out still what does Sheva Al Tasa mean, and why is that that limitation? And we mentioned how the Avnei Nezer applies it to this particular question, saying that shofar, the mitzvah, has to still exist, even if Chazal prohibited it, because Sheva Al Tasa would mean that they can tell you not to blow a shofar, but to say the mitzvah is not there anymore, that would become vaseh, and that's outside their authority. So we'll stop there. I wish you a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And God willing, we have this remaining piece of it put together, and it's hopefully a very beautiful structure, which we will see tomorrow. So I'll see you, God willing, at 9. And you should have a happy and healthy day. Should be only good things.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
Yashikach.